Welcome to Tunnel Talk and No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
And we are here for a very special bonus episode. We are thrilled to be joined by Rich Latta, co-host of One Nation Radio. Welcome, Rich.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Glad to get the call. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the show. We have a mutual friend. Shout out to Trish. I heard Trish on an episode, and, you know, I pretty much, you know, followed her around and ran to you guys.
as do we all.
And I was like, man, in another universe, maybe this could be like One Nation Radio. So that's very entertaining.
I
find you guys' sense of humor just absolutely hilarious, and your chemistry, and overall just a really entertaining listen. Love the show. Listen every week.
Mutual admiration society, because I listen to One Nation Radio, and every single time you and James dissolve into cackles,
it's so infectious. Yeah, you guys are so fun to listen to. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you guys have that long-term energy of, like, you know what's going on in each other's brains so clearly, which is the most fun thing for me as a listener.
I love very much when James knows what you're going to say next, and you just go, stop it.
Yeah, that comes from a lot of years of being friends.
Yeah, how do you guys know each other?
So, I met James actually in a barbershop when I was like 17 years old. So, like, I do music as well. You know, I rap on the intro for One Nation Radio, and we were all part of like kind of like a music collective called Red Carpet Entertainment. And James was kind of, he was like the A&R. So, he was responsible kind of for, you know, listening to everybody's stuff, make sure it was dope. And me and James kind of noticed right away that we were both very, opinionated about whether it was sports we were talking about, music, and we would pretty much explore the topic all the way until like maybe even uncomfort. But through that, you know, we grew a big friendship because, you know, I was really dedicated to the music. He saw that, and he's about a year older than me, so he's kind of like a big brother to me in a way too. And, you know, he's kind of looked at me as like, you know, a little brother in a sense. And before, and then, you know, we kind of found out we were both lapsed wrestling fans, I want to say maybe about 5 years after we started hanging out. And then we would have these like 1 hour conversations, kind of maybe even longer than that, on the phone every week. And those were like essentially like the prequel to what became One Nation Radio. I was like, yo, we should record these. And this was like in the Wild West. Like, not everybody had podcasting. Like, back then it was like, this is 2012. And I'm like, well, you know, Bill Simmons has a podcast, and Chris Jericho, and that's in like Bomani Jones. Ones. That was what we, you know, kind of got on. And I was like, all right, so let's just start doing it. If you listen to some of those early One Nation Radios, it is the Wild West. It is rough.
Oh, we know about that.
It's hard. It's hard to start
really
doing.
Hard. Yeah.
I think it does. It seems like really simple when the first time you suggest it, you're like, yeah, we'll just get on there and we'll have one of those phone conversations.
Right.
And it's not that it's like the hardest thing in the world to do a podcast. I'm not saying that. But you do get in there and you're like, wow, I got to be a little more prepared than I realized.
Right. Yeah. But luckily with James and I, like, we had lots of chemistry, I would say, just built in from our friendship.
Yeah.
And I hope that still like comes through on the show every week.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, finishing each other's sentences, like going through the same running gags and running jokes. We're big on running jokes, and it all kind of, you know, just helps us kind of align. You know, we both have our individual tastes, but we'll go to the end of the road on something. Like, nah, this is where I stand on it. This is where you stand on it. But ultimately, we're trying to get to what is the best.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Now, So you figured out you're both lapsed wrestling fans. So I've got kind of two questions. One is, like, what is your life journey of wrestling? And then the second is, what were you guys watching when you started the podcast?
Yeah, so my journey in wrestling starts like many other young children. Usually it's like it's an older person in your life that introduces you to it and infects you with the sickness. but it was my grandfather, who's a big wrestling fan. I'm from Springfield, Massachusetts, and you know, that's a big town for WWF house shows back in the day, even till this day. So, you know, when I became of age, my dad was he was a police officer for you know, Springfield Police Department. So was my grandfather. They used to just bring me to the house shows and not pay or whatever, and just walk in through the security. And I would, you know, just go every so often, and it was like, yo, this is so cool. Like, these guys are fighting. And I would say, between my grandfather's early exposure of me into watching wrestling with him, and then he had a video cassette recording of Survivor Series 1989.
Wow.
And I watched this tape religiously when I was like a 6-7 year old. Like, I pretty much watch it once a year, kind of just like to remember my grandfather or whatever. Mm-hmm, but you know, from there I just jump in. I'm kind of like, I've always been kind of like an all or nothing kind of person. If I get into something, I'm gonna want to watch as much of it as I can. So I was watching WWF, WCW. I didn't know how to watch ECW, but I found it in the magazines, and then I would always see, who are these Japanese guys, Mitsuharu Misawa and Kenta Kobashi? But I could never see them, I just saw them in the magazines.
Yeah.
So I was too young to be a tape trader, because who's going to tape trade with like an 8-year-old kid? Like, so hopefully it was just no like, right. Hopefully, you know, my address wasn't going out to strange men.
But another time, though.
Right. And then from there, you know, I was watching all throughout, you know, the first show I can actually remember was Starrcade 95 was what I started watching. And it was WCW versus New Japan Pro Wrestling. And from there, it was immediately like, oh, this is the best of our country versus Japan. Who's going to win? And I just, you know, was just enthralled by it. And then, you know, got into Shawn Michaels after that, pretty much like the lead up to WrestleMania 12. And, you know, I was hooked for like a good, you know, 5 years, I'd say, like right after maybe like, you know, like 2001 or so. I had a lot of different changes in life, moving across the country. Didn't always have cable at the time, so you just kind of fall out of it, but stay kind of connected through the video games. Mm-hmm. I would still play all the video games.
Oh, yeah.
I stopped watching essentially for a decade. So when The Rock came back, that's when I was like, oh, I'll check out wrestling. I'll see what's going on. And then I don't know what happened, but this was also the Wild West of YouTube back in the day, where they had everything. I was like, mm-hmm, I'm going to fill in the last 10 years every night. And I would stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning just filling in the entire 2000s decade of like WWF, then watching how WCW ended and everything like that. And, you know, when we first started One Nation Radio, it was like, you know, The Rock and John Cena were there. It was like the rise of CM Punk. Daniel Bryan starting to catch fire. And that's like what really was what made us really get into it at the time.
It is crazy to me that when you guys started the podcast, it was the rise of CM Punk. And look at us now.
And here we are.
Look at us.
And he's still rising.
Still rising.
He's home.
Hell is freezing over. But yeah, like with the CM Punk thing, it was square in the middle of his title reign, the 434 days. I remember when he quit, we did an emergency episode, you know, and now I kind of stand on this though. All throughout, I feel like I've told the truth how I felt about him and his actions all, you know, through it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, you know, how we've ended up where we are. But I imagine he thinks the same thing when he's taking pictures with Triple H.
Probably kind of a darker tone, like, just like, it's interesting.
He just goes back to his hotel and kind of stares into space for a while.
How did I arrive here? What have I done?
Oh my God.
It is very interesting watching somebody's soul die in front of you.
Yeah.
Poor fella.
Yeah, poor fella. That's what we've always said about him. Yeah.
You know, you reap what you sow. I think you touched on this a little earlier, but so you've been doing this podcast for, you know, 10 plus years. What do you think, like, what keeps you doing it? Like, what is like the goal, you know?
So strangely, I don't really have a goal with it. I just do it because I love it. I love to have fun, you know, talking with James about it. And then fortunately, people started listening. Like, and it's not like, you know, like, we don't have the biggest audience or anything, but obviously we're not near like zero or anything either. So like, over the years, it's just been something where, oh, people respect what I say. They care about what I have to say. And most importantly, like, I do it because like, I have fun doing it. Like, you know, I'm in a whole pursuit of, you know, being a rap artist. Like, this isn't something that necessarily is, you know, like, it's not something like, hey, if it, I use a lot of attention and time and stuff like that simply to, like, you know, fulfill kind of something inside me that tells me, hey, you'll be happy doing this. I think it also does help with the public speaking as well, you know, with the rap as well, like, you know, knowing how to hold the microphone. And that's why, like, I went to, you know, starting doing the handheld mic, because I'm like, all right, I can just, you know, be familiar with the mic in my hand and different stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reason I keep doing it after 10 years is just like, there's a funny, like, kind of little meme, and it's like, got to see it through, my boy. Like, whatever the destination is, you know, I got to see it through. I got to see how far, you know, we can take this, you know, how many, you know, because, you know, the reason, you know, I kind of looked at it was like, yo, who are going to be the new voices in this stuff? And I was looking around, and it was like, yeah, you know, Dave's doing his thing, whatever. I was like, what about when Dave's not here anymore?
Yeah.
You know, what about when Brian Alvarez hangs it up? What about when, you know, Wade Keller's done with it? I'm like, who are people going to start listening to? And it seems like that mentality has spread to a lot of people, because there were not a lot of wrestling podcasts back, you know, when I started. And it's really cool that a lot of people have podcasts now to express, and especially shows like you guys too, because it's like, you guys started the podcast not as lifelong fans, but like, this is something that you got into and you're just like, you know, I'm just going to jump in and talk about my thoughts, and it's not like serious like that, but like, I carry like a lifetime of wrestling fandom. So it's like, it's just different. So, and I think all the different perspectives are worthwhile and cool at the same time. So I'm always just trying to contribute my part to what it is. And, you know, I feel like I have some clever things to say about things in a way that most people in the space, I don't think look at it from, just because of my background, my upbringing, and also, you know, how me and James, you know, communicate with each other about things that are not wrestling. So like these can be just like, these can be like hip hop debates. Like, you think our wrestling debates are crazy? Wait till I, like, you know, I'll just drop James off like a random paragraph in a group chat. I'm like, yeah, man, you ever thought about, you know, the clips and Run DMC, how like Sucker MCs is basically grinding, like, and just like expound upon like just thoughts and thoughts. And it's like, James is the same way. So like, I think it all kind of contributes to the show.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Now, you got involved with AEW, like with the album, right? How did that happen?
So that happened with my relationship with Montese, who, you know, was already working on stuff with them. I also had, you know, Mikey Ruckus, like during when AEW was getting started, he would solicit artists on Twitter and just trying to see who's out there. And I would send my stuff back to him, and he would listen to it and check it out. And so he was like kind of familiar with me. What Montese kind of opened the door and was like, yo, I want you to like produce like this, and you know, we'll try to get you placed on here. So I ended up producing three songs on the first AEW Who We Are album, a song for Jay Cargill, a song for Mark Henry, and a song for Nyla Rose. And I rapped on the Nyla Rose song too. I was like, I'm just send a verse. What are they gonna do? Like, they gonna take it off? And I was like, nah. So I'm sending it anyway. So and then from there, like, you know, I dropped a couple of, you know, beat breakdown videos for it. And I ended up getting pretty cool with Mikey Ruckus, and we ended up working on Marina Shafir's theme. So I'm the person rapping on her theme. And then this has led to, you know, another opportunity with like AEW Who We Are Part 2. And I'm like a co-executive producer on that album. I'm going to be producing like 11 songs on that one.
Wow. So, oh, shit. That's awesome.
So that's really cool. That's coming out possibly like next year. There's a lot of like, there's more things to come with it, but I was fortunate. Like, you know, when I was growing up, I always wanted to do stuff with music and wrestling. I was like, I want to be a rapper, so cool. And I want to be a wrestler, but unfortunately my path didn't take me to wrestling, but this is my way to kind of contribute to the business, because I love those old WWF Aggression albums. Like, those things used to sell millions of records, and you know, I bought them and thought it'd be really cool to like help tell people's stories through music.
That's really cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I must sometimes be weird to just look around and be like, wow, and I really did it, and this is really what I do.
Yeah. It was. I remember the first time Marina Shafir walked out to the theme, my Twitter timeline started going crazy, and it was like tons of notifications, and then my mom had called me. I was watching it. My wife and I were, you know, waiting for it to come on, and it was just like, wow, I'm here. And then, you know, songs are in the video game as well, and it's like,
crazy.
You know, it's on. So, and, you know, fortunately, you know, with Montese, you know, I started working with Swerve as well, so, like, we did a lot of work. Kind of, it was like all these things that are you know, doing work over here, doing work over here, and then it's all these things are kind of like building up, you know,
yeah.
a name, a reputation. Be like, hey, maybe you should call Rich. He can, you know, do something for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's incredibly cool. Well, so you mentioned when you were talking about kind of like why you guys do the podcast, you talked about like how cool it is to have, you know, lots of different perspectives and the perspective that you guys bring of like having been fans your whole lives, which definitely like is one of the reasons I think that we all enjoy listening to you so much is that you bring like a different perspective than ours, and that like we can listen and sometimes be like, oh, that really illuminated like why this thing happens. I didn't get it before and now I do. And sometimes we really agree with you and sometimes we passionately don't.
That's cool.
But we love the way you help us work through our feelings. So we put together some topics that we're going to talk about with you that touch on some of those agreements and disagreements.
Sure.
And we're going to start with one that I guess we've come around to your point of view on, the hot topic of MJF in AEW today, and the kind of the topic of sports entertainment in general. So,
yeah.
So maybe we could start by just do a little check-in with the whole group on kind of where we're at with Mr. Maxwell these days.
I'll say, if you don't lose that belt, I'm
gonna
lose my mind.
It's got to go.
It's gotta go. All the belts he's got, gotta get out of there.
Just start taking them off him as he walks. Hey man, come here, give me this.
No, that's not yours anymore. Stop it.
I think currently where I stand on MJF is this is a guy who is a 27-year-old world champion. He's been called this prodigy for as long back as, you know, he can remember. I actually saw MJF on an indie show in 2017 in Ybor City, so that's basically Tampa. And he was right in the middle of the show. He was a mid-card act. I think the main event that night was like Matt Riddle against somebody. And this guy, MJF, was doing flips and all this stuff, and he was doing all the stuff he basically kind of rails against in character. And mm-hmm. I remember him because, you know, he cut a solid promo and stuff like that. And I always kind of seen it in him. Like, hey, there's something there. As far as, like, right now, I think this guy is a 27-year-old guy that his face, you know, is trying to live up to those lofty expectations.
Yeah.
Very influenced by what he's influenced by as far as the people, you know, that came before him. And he really was trying to find his own way with this and be different than the people that came before him. No matter what, he's not going to be tougher than John Moxley. He's not going to be almost a force of personality that CM Punk is. Even though, you know, he worked with CM Punk, and, you know, a lot of people rightfully gave MJF his props for a lot of the great work he did, you know, leading up to that, you know, as a heel. But you're not going to be Kenny Omega. So I think he did this stuff to essentially be like, how different can I be from everyone else, and also prove, you know, I've got the goods. I think there's a point of unchecked power that kind of got out of control at a certain point. And it, I think, caused a major downturn in interest from, you know, the people kind of like myself, like that, you know, kind of came into this thing kind of through like, hey, we watched New Japan Pro Wrestling before this. And then, you know, you open this up in America now, follow the Elite, follow Jericho, follow Moxley, and it's like there's something not right here. And like the enemy, and that the bad wrestling, if you will, was like the WWE and like the sports entertainment, the goofy shit. if you guys could only see what they were doing with Jon Moxley before he left WWE.
I believe we've all seen like one or two promos that did illuminate for us why he was excited not to be there.
That guy looked checked out. As motivated as this guy has been the last 4 years. Now picture him being completely checked out, going through the motions, not caring. This is where this guy was. And he'll tell you himself, you know, on those podcasts that he released. But yeah. I thought just like he was the perfect illustration on what the sports entertainment stuff can do, which, you know, is stuff like Rest in Peace, The Fiend. And the whims of Vince McMahon. That's really, to me, all what sports entertainment means. It's like the whims of Vince McMahon. So when I saw that stuff, what I felt like infecting AEW, it was like, oh my God, it was like, I'm seeing red. It was like, they're going to try to ruin this thing too.
Yeah. I think what we, I think when you and James first, like the first podcast where I really felt like you guys turned on it was back, like before, I think it was before All Out. I'm not sure. And
I think it was.
Yeah. Where we were really like, I think you were really upset that MJF and Adam Cole just weren't as interested, weren't willing to fight to the death for the belt because the story had become, you know, more about them than it was the belt. And I think we, at that time, we were both still really into it because it felt like the character stuff that we really enjoyed, that like you could see these people's motivations and see them wanting something, see their actions making sense. And then I think they lost all of that when Adam Cole got hurt, because all of a sudden all of it became nonsensical. But up until that moment, when you guys kept saying WWE shit, I couldn't make sense of what that meant at that time. I mean, now it's just sort of, is like, oh, is it that one episode doesn't connect to another and it all just seems thrown together because that's what's going on now.
It's like a lot of tropey stuff and it's like, oh, you could literally sub this out for something you've seen before. But if you haven't seen it, like you guys, I guess that confusion would be valid there.
Yeah.
I listened to a podcast. I'm not sure who said this. It may have been, I don't know if it was Jesse Collins or Warren Hayes. I think I figured out why I didn't connect to the MJF Adam Cole. And at the time, I was like, because I actually re-listened to it today, kind of in prep of this. And I was like, this shit is just so fucking fake or whatever between them. And obviously, duh, wrestling, like, fake or whatever. And
no, that can't be right. I think it's
right. right. But the thing about AEW that they've been great at is these long-term relationships.
Yeah.
People that have years and years and years, and then microwaving this thing with Adam Cole and MJF for 2 months, that investment in them together was not there for me. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think this is dumb. I was like, I think they should just be trying to contest for the championship. But, you know, I think the wind eventually, like, you know, blew my direction on it. But, like, I could have easily been wrong, like, about this whole thing. And, like, it could have just been, you know, in another timeline, these guys don't get injured. They figure something out and, you know, they get to tell the story they want to the right way. But this is, I don't know. I think I learned later why it didn't connect for me.
No, that makes sense to me. Like, the inauthenticity. I think people have talked about too, like Cody not connecting with AEW audiences. I think Sarah has said it, like, because he comes across so inauthentic. And I do think that's like,
there was a time that he had him
issue.
Yeah.
There was a time that he had him. And then like, it was like, all right, once he stopped appearing with the Elite, once he went further into, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever heard my big theory about the Cody Rhodes thing, but
I don't think I have.
So, you know, his whole thing was he could not challenge for the AEW title. That's the stipulation they put on him, blase, blah. I maintain that is an angle. Like, that was basically, oh, we know who our first four champions are, Jericho, Moxley, Omega, Hangman. That was never changing at that point. So, wouldn't it be easy just to never challenge for the title if you're never going to win it?
Yeah.
in yeah. real life, like yeah. oh yeah, that'll be my yeah. gimmick. Like, yeah, and right. it'll be like, yeah. yeah. So yeah. it's like, you don't have to.
And then we can take it back like 3 or 4 years from now. Yeah. yeah.
Right. And not even that, because like he's not going to work with those people. I think my biggest problem with it was not that he couldn't be the champion. He couldn't yeah. work with the champion. So yeah. he yeah. couldn't help get anybody over. So yeah. it put him yeah. further yeah. into this
yeah.
isolation, which, you know, culminated in his exit in the company and also now becoming, you know, the great American hero of WWE.
Yeah, life is funny. Yeah,
racism
yeah,
life healer. Is funny. You know. Yeah. God.
Well, he did do that, we've all got to give him credit.
Early on in our wrestling journey, when he gave that promo, and it was just like, what is happening?
That was wild.
James and I were horrified. Moment. It was really a time.
Yeah,
was still one of the wilder things that I feel like I've seen happen. On yeah.
Like, James's whole point was like, how dare you be from Atlanta and you cut this promo like about this, like knowing like Lord. You know the amount of redlining that is going yeah. on in your yeah. in your own city. What's wrong with you? And yeah. all the zones and everything. In his like, what's wrong giant, with you?
In his like McMansion house.
Right.
Bus. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real question of how much Cody does know or has educated himself about it, I guess. Some
well, questions when people, there. People kept talking about like him running for office someday, and I just kept being like, we can't live in that time zone. I can't live in that timeline.
No, well, and the neck tattoo. He's taken himself out of political office, right? Unless me he has.
The neck tattoo is a deep fake. The neck tattoo could come off at any time.
Yeah,
every morning he gets up and
laser removal, turtlenecks, he'll find a way.
The idea of Cody Rhodes as a political candidate and he's always wearing turtlenecks under his suit.
And everyone's like, who could know what was under there? There are no pictures.
Just an ode to America. Just proof of his American pride.
Right. You don't love America?
Exactly. Yeah. Turn it right back on you. That's what Cody does. When you watch wrestling, like, how do you watch it? Do you watch it primarily as, like, sports or as the entertainment? Or, like, what is the balance when you look at something and think, like, do I like yeah. this or not?
Because, like, talking to, like, my brother who was a childhood fan of wrestling, he was like, oh, yeah, it just, like, slotted into, like, the same way I watch, like, baseball and football and everything else. And I was like, oh, that's not at all the way I watch it. Like, yeah.
So when I was younger, I was a Power Rangers fan. So I was always building up for the big fight at the end of the episode. So I kind of think that's how I started watching wrestling. Was like, oh, it's all fights. I'm in. So like,
that is possibly the funniest possible answer. Do you watch it as sports or entertainment? I watch it as Power Rangers. That is no. amazing.
I watch it as an ideal version of Power Rangers.
Yes.
I mean, that 100% makes sense though, because yeah. like it is like people yeah. get into it when they're 8 or when they're having a deep personal crisis. You yeah. know? It's not normal to get into it as an adult.
And that's us, baby.
But, you know, but over time, you know, being a big sports fan, like, I kind of start with that Power Ranger stuff, and then I, you know, also put the sports element into it because I want to yeah. see who's actually the best, like, guys bell to bell, like, who's having the best matches. You know, I was a big Shawn Michaels fan growing up, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Jericho, Ultimo Dragon. Like, I was big into, like, the cruiserweight wrestling, you know, kind of from the jump. And, you know, that goes to the modern day, like, with, you know, the Elite. I became such a big fan of them because yeah. it was like, yo, the Young Bucks are just, like, I admired their athleticism, their teamwork, and also like kind of like their fighting style. I was like, yo, they're just like they're just these blurs essentially. And then Kenny Omega is someone, when I watch him wrestle, it's like he's willing to die in the ring. Like,
oh, yeah.
like the hell he'll put himself through. And you know, he'll fight with, you know, just he's a tremendous athlete, like just from a, you know, a physical standpoint, but like he is someone I think that can have people live and die with you know, the way he emotes in the ring and like as a baby face. And then Hangman later on, like I just felt like his progression, just kind of where he was as a young wrestler and where he's kind of at his peak right now, he's just someone that is so rugged, I feel like. And also kind of combines the best of what I like about Kenny and what I like about like the Young Bucks and into like kind of like a younger, bigger frame. And I was a really big fan of all those guys. And how it, you know, turns for me is like, yeah, man, I see the sports element of this because I like all their fighting styles. I'm not so much into, you know, when people were trying to do like MMA in the ring and all that. I'm like, yo, yeah. I don't, it just doesn't hit for me or whatever, but yeah. I like, you know, fast paced action. That's why I like the luchadors, the flips, the, everything like that. Like, and you know, the fighting spirit, if you will. I like people to either like whoop each other's ass with chops or, you know, is some Lucha Libre shit. Like for me.
So, in that, with that in mind, what are like some of the like the stories that you had that you have really gotten into? Like, I assume like Heyman's, you know, winning the belt was probably something that hit hard. But like, what are stories like that that did end up like you were like you got really into?
I would say Daniel Bryan versus the Authority. I was really into a lot back then, and it was. Just watching week to week, and they beat this guy down for months and months and months. And then that's how I started kind of, you know, getting my first taste of like, oh, how does the backstage reporting kind of work with what you see on screen? And then like, you know, originally you're told like just everyone's lying about everything. But, oh, I know some people are telling the truth. Like there's, this is what the plan was. This is actually what it got changed to. And I found all that interesting. I was like, there's no reason I can't make the like the reporting side of wrestling work for how I watch it on screen. It doesn't have to be a detriment. It doesn't have to you know, just be something like, oh, I thought something was going to happen. They didn't do it, and I'm pissed at everyone. I didn't think like that. I was like, I can I can use my brain, and I can.
And that was more than many in the IWC.
That's incredibly.
Oh, Dave Meltzer's a goddamn liar. You know, these people are subject to change their mind. Let's not act like they're not. But
yeah,
you know, and I would say, you know, Kenny Omega winning the, you know, IWGP Championship. That's like, I think the greatest championship win I'll ever see in my lifetime. When I watched the end of Okada Omega 4, I watched it with Jeremy and Josh of a podcast called Keeping It Strong Style for New Japan. And I was like, man, what do we do with our lives now? Like after it was over, it was like a movie. And, you know, it was like an encapsulation of this chase of Okada, who's the mountaintop, the greatest, the perfect wrestler, the greatest champion we've ever seen, in New Japan. And then it was like an 18-month chase between who was going to beat him. It was going to be either Tetsuya Naito or it was going to be Kenny Omega. And through their performances in G1s at Wrestle Kingdom, like they'd be trying to outshine each other. And there was like a kind of a meta story within, you know, what you saw on screen in that time. Golden Lovers, Elite, being the Elites all getting started. All this stuff is like creating the genesis, I think, for the story that I enjoyed the most in pro wrestling.
Yeah. It's so interesting. I think that like for me, Kenny probably is the wrestler who makes me understand like sports vibes the best, because when I watch him in the ring, I'm just like, this guy's there for real. Like he is really, like you said, like he's willing to die in the ring. And I don't think anyone should die in the ring, but he's like, yo, I
will do whatever for this match to be great. And yeah, you know, there are other wrestlers like that as well, but he just, you know, is one that comes to mind for me right now.
For sure. And I think that was, it was really, it was kind of a strange moment for me once after we started to get into the Elite, which took us like a little minute after we started watching. But it was weird to realize that people rag on them for like not having in-ring psychology or like just like doing flips or whatever, because one of the things that was most accessible about the Elite for us as like new fans was that like you could follow the stories they were telling in the ring. Like you could follow them outside of the ring too, but that actually you would like, you know, like just like kind of sit up when they were doing stuff and be like, oh, I understand like why people are wrestling the way they are a little bit in this match, or like I understand what they're doing.
It is very funny to have like come to learn that psychology, in-ring psychology, is like code for like a certain kind of wrestling that I don't enjoy. So it's like, it doesn't actually mean anything like psychology wise. It just means like they're doing real graps and it's boring.
I think that's a constant fight. And I think that is something that older wrestlers of every generation pass down to wrestlers that they are afraid of outshining them and taking their spots. And then it was like, hey, you need to slow down because I can't do that stuff anymore. And now I'm on top. But if you keep going that way, you're going to be on top. I'm going to be out of a job. And that stuff is permeated to fans and some really awful corners of the internet. And it's kind of unfortunate because, you know, I have no interest in going to harass, you know, people about, you know, how they wrestle and stuff like that. I'm like, nah, I kind of just like my guys, but it's wild.
Yeah,
it's crazy out there. Do we want to? We're skipping around a little, but can we check in with you, Rich, about how you are feeling about what's going on with the Elite right now and what you're anticipating or what?
Where Rich do said, I
no,
begin?
You may not. You may not check in.
You put the mic down.
Ready to go.
So I would consider myself a pretty big fan of the Elite. One of the more vocal ones, you know, that's out there. It took me a while, but I think the Elite's booking in 2023 has been terrorism.
Yeah.
It has, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Emotionally.
It's certainly been emotional.
Yeah.
So if you take back to the beginning, you know, we're looking at the Game 7 ladder match. We're fresh off the best of seven. I think this thing is just one of the most sensational things that's ever been aired in this country. And I just felt like it wasn't getting the love or whatever. Yeah. And I was just like paranoid about it. So I started doing those NBA on NBC things on Twitter that eventually the company adopted themselves.
Yeah, that was so awesome.
So, like, I was like, yo, there's going to be a way that I can kind of contribute to this thing and make it bigger than it is. And and once that, you know, that whole thing culminated, I was like, man, why aren't they really promoting what Kenny did at the Dome, like, you know, with Will Ospreay a week ago like that? What, you know, this Game 7 thing, you know, I think this is a legendary match and a legendary, you know, thing with the Lucha Brothers. Like, you'll never see anything like this again. And I just didn't feel the promotional push behind them. And I don't know why. And then that rolled into seeing Hangman's whole feud is going on simultaneously with John Moxley, and this thing's rolling. Yeah. Like, you know, they're opening up Dynamites, you know, four and a quarter star matches. It's escalating each time. They're beating the hell out of each other. They have the Texas Death Match, the, you know, Kenny and the Bucks and drop those trios belts. They reunite finally to fight the BCC, which to me is the seminal feud of all Elite Wrestling, like that it was building to. Like, so like the Attitude Era, for example, I think the whole thing was leading to Vince McMahon pulling back the thing and is like, it was me, Austin. Like, that's what it entire, that's it, it culminated to that. And I felt similarly with the Elite and the BCC. It was like, yo, Moxley came in here, Danielson came in here. And, you know, they have the complete opposite, you know, way of, you know, thinking from the Elite or whatever. Like, you know, it was funny because everyone pushed for like this FTR versus the Elite feud and, you know, CM Punk, FTR. And I'm like, the BCC's right there and the matches are going to be like way better. So what are we talking
about? Better. Yeah.
So I thought this was just the ideal philosophical battle of like how, you know, these guys train together, you know, and they... And the Elite, they just have all these problems. And then the Elite came back together, proving that the power of friendship wins or whatever. And then they just don't kick ass together for like, you know, they should have kicked a little, they should like kick at all, ass for like, you know, five, 6 months or whatever, right? So as a fan, I kind of felt robbed like from that. You know, they win Blood and Guts and whatever. They do the feud. We kind of miss out on a lot of the singles matches and everything like that. But this, their contracts are hanging over their heads. They're deciding whether they're going to stay or go. The time bomb in Chicago is going off every, you know, week and a half. Every time Kenny Omega is going to do something on national television.
Jesus Christ.
And then, like, you know, the Bucks kind of just start, I think, feeling checked out or whatever. And it just seems like they actually get stale, which never happens to the Young Bucks because, yeah. like, they usually are just so innovative and, you know, being the elite, it all slows down, like, as far yeah. as, like, being on that. And I watched Being the Elite for a long time, and then eventually I just kind of stopped clicking. And then yeah. it was like, yo, there's something not right here. And then on screen, Kenny Omega's losing every big match. I'm yeah. like, usually I don't care about those things, but then, like, I think it hit me after the MJF match, and I was like, yo, they're trying to position him as, like, this out-to-pasture kind of guy. And I'm like, yo, no. Like, like I yeah. saw the Tokyo Dome this year. Like, this guy's, like, he on any given day, like, I think Will Ospreay's the best wrestler in the world now, but on any given day, the best wrestler in the world can still be Kenny Omega.
Yeah, and we saw that Ospreay rematch at Forbidden Door, too. Right. So it's like, we've got multiple instances in the same year of just, like, yeah, this and it's man like can go.
The promotion after that, like, I believe, you know, maybe the Trish and Sarah podcast talked about this one. It was like, you know, they did that match, and it didn't, like, grow afterward. Like, it was like, yo, this yeah. should have been promoted better. And I yeah. guess in you know, from there, you know, the end of the year, thank God Hangman found Swerve to really bite Seriously. Down into something, to where if he's losing, that's cool, but it's going to do something for someone. Even if it's not him, yeah. it's going to do something for yeah. Swerve, who, like, is launching into another galaxy right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega putting over MJF. They had Jay White pin Kenny Omega the following week. So I was like, what are we doing? Like, yeah. and then that's that when wild. I think I went off the deep end. And the Young Bucks have been snatched, you know, into whatever they're going to do now. I don't know. They've been kidnapped by aliens or something. But and then Hangman now, I'm like, all right, it's been a couple weeks. Where's he at? No, yeah. like, are we waiting for a grand return? Like, what's That's going on? Wild. So, just going forward, I'm like, well, what is there really to be excited about if you're a fan of the elite, you know, all right. elite wrestling? Like, I want to see these guys team yeah. together like the BCC did. I want to see yeah. them get multiple members in the C2 like that, like they did. It's like, yo.
Yeah. yeah.
What is this? Like, they just haven't ever pushed and promoted them like the top stars I think they are for long enough. And the elite, to their detriment, I think they've been incredibly unselfish, and it doesn't always reflect in, you know, people feeling like you're a bigger star. It might not get you in the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, even though you should be there, you know, in the Young Bucks case. And you know, all gets Hangman is like, yo, you don't want to come to work. Like, it's like, they can't win. So I was like, I'm like, if they can't win, they got to start being selfish. Like, yeah. and I think that's the answer.
Yeah.
It's been such a wild year when you look back on it. Yeah. It's just like the amount of, like, start, stop, and things that got dropped. And you think once they were re-signed, it would be on, like, a different trajectory, but it's just, like, kept going, which is troubling.
And it sucks that it's like at almost every moment, like, of the year, I feel like I've had some idea of, like, something that's going on that is making things a fucking shit show. Like, not that much of an idea, but, like, a light idea. You know, it's like, as we approach All In, I'm like, oh, yeah, CM Punk is going nuclear, so that's definitely having a little impact on what's going on here. Like, that kind of stuff. But it is just demoralizing. Like, when, you know, like, especially, like, for us, I think sometimes it just feels like these are the guys that, like, not the guys that got us into wrestling, like, immediately, but, like, these are the guys that we stayed for. Like, these are the people that, like, after we'd been around a couple months, we were like, oh, that's they're doing what's cool. They're doing right. something interesting and cool, and that's why we're here, and we want to get to see them do that interesting, cool thing that they're so good at, which is, like, it is storytelling. It is, like, that long-term character stuff, and it has been so hard this year to feel like I can't trust that they're going to get to, like, follow up on things in the way that makes sense for their characters, or that they're going to be able to, like, have, like, feuds in a way that makes sense for their characters. And I don't think it's their fault. Like, I don't think they're suddenly bad at that thing. Like,
right.
I want, like, why won't you let them do it?
Right. Yeah. Like, you mentioned, you know, the, what's good for their characters. It's like, yo, I thought it was great that Konosuke Takeshi beat Kenny Omega, but, like, then he stood behind Don Callis for months and didn't wrestle a match. So it was like, Well, what was the put over for?
Yeah.
Do you agree with our theory that, like, what's wrong with that feud is that Kenny Omega can't fight Don Callis? Like, he, in order to kill that feud, to put it down, they have made Don Callis the, like, the main player. And so it's never going to be satisfying because Kenny can't fight him.
So Don is a trained wrestler. So, like, he will get in there eventually. All right. And he will...
he will get in there.
Yeah, he'll get in there.
Rich, no one has said that to us before. He's going to get in. He's Don Callis is going to get in there, you think?
I bet it's going to be a banger, too.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a match or anything, right? But he's taking a V-trigger, right, one day. And that's going to be ultimate payoff of everything. But I think the problem with the Don Callis family is they have solid wrestlers. They have guys I love, like Sammy Guevara, Konosuke Takeshita. They have not made... If they would just make Takeshita like an ace-level guy, I think it would go a long way. However, Don Callis is a very strong personality. Some would say very about Don Callis.
Yeah.
And I think just the time that it takes for everything to happen has really took a toll on this. It's like, all right, he turned on Kenny in that cage in June. Yeah. And it's like, it's September, and it's like, yo, we don't know if we're close to the ending of this at all. Like, so, it's just like, all right, we're waiting. Do something, please.
When it goes 2 months without progressing, it's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about the Bucks turning heel and all the talk about them finally leading their own faction?
You know, I kind of got worked by the whole thing, man. Like, and it's like, you know, with them shutting down being the Elite, it was like, damn, this is sad. Like, it is like, if they're not the Elite anymore, it's like, almost like, what are they? Right. Yeah. And I guess they're just going to have to show us, because if it's one thing the Young Bucks have been in their career is counted out, bet against. Yeah. And, you know, they've had to show people, you know, their vision of wrestling. You know, they could, you know, they could sell more T-shirts than anybody. They could do All In, you know, with 10,000 people. So I have all the confidence in Matt and Nick at figuring it out. I just think it's possibly like one of the most interesting part of their careers, because the resistance to them, it's always been there to an extent, but now it's like, all right, like it feels like their backs are against the wall now. Yeah. They've got to, if they come out with something that's not quite there, I don't think it's going to be good for them. However, I believe in Matt and Nick. So I think they're going to rise to the occasion. Like the greatest tag team of all time would. So,
well, they actually weren't on Dax's top tag team of all time list. So I'm so sorry to have to correct you on that, Rich.
Don't worry, Rich. We'll edit it out so you don't see it.
What am I thinking? Make sure to fix that in post. I wouldn't want to, upset Dax or anything. But
we just see him as kind of like, he's the authority on our podcast, you know? It's like we look to him for just
WWD. Right.
We'll get some of those bracelets made up for our 3-year anniversary.
That's great.
They're in such a shitty position. The way that people like talk about and interact with the Young Bucks and the concept of the Young Bucks in the wrestling community is just so unhinged to observe, to be honest. Yeah. Like very almost threatened. All the time, it's just like, what is going on with your relationship to these pretty normal seeming men?
It's like crazy that people, it's like not just they're like, oh, like I don't care, I don't like watching them and they annoy me. It's like this really weirdly tinged hate. I mean, it's not normal.
It's an affront to their entire concept of the medium. And it's like, me and James have said it several times, like, have you never seen white guys doing Lucha Libre? Like, is it really that like much? Like, I don't know. Like, because once you just think about it like that, it's like, oh, my complaints are stupid. Like, that's immediately what they should come to. But, you know, that is cause for self-reflection. And I don't think that's...
They see a man in tassels and they're like, I can't handle this.
I can't abide this.
Not.
Right.
Stone him. Yeah.
I don't think a lot of the IWC is willing to do much reflection, even though it probably would solve a lot.
just like a, oh, just if, like if a some little, men went like, to timeout therapy? Corner. Oh, if they went to the punishment cubicle, that's what we need it for.
Put them in a little terrarium. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just go in there and think about how you're talking and how you're behaving, and then we'll just see if we get any change. Well, I think we all want to see just something for the elite in 2024. we're going to shift sideways, though, and go back to MJF, who must lose these belts. We all agree. And we wanted to check in about who belts lose to. Who could get those belts? Who we want to see have those belts? And specifically, Leah, I will let you talk about this. Do you know what I mean?
No, not at all.
The swerve question for Trish and Sarah.
Yeah.
Just fix it in post.
No worries.
I'm so sorry I keep kicking
just
it
saying,
to you.
Just fix it in post and keeping talking is really, like, helpful, I think, my, for editing. Allie,
my favorite thing you do is when you go, hey, can you handle this next thing? And I'm like, what next thing?
I don't know why I do it. It's, I think it's like sometimes I hear myself talking for a while and I like, she's got to shut up. I'll just kick it to Leah. And it's like, well, she's not in your head, babe. She don't know what's happening in there.
Well, I do actually now know that.
Now you know.
So one of the so obviously I came out of that Swerve Hangman feud being like Swerve has to have the belt. He just he has
absolutely.
He, in fact, he probably should be the next belt collector and hold all belts.
He can just go backstage and grab the belt now. Like like we did it. We're good to go.
And the tag and trios ones for sure. He can start defeating whole trios teams by himself. That's
they gotta get the nameplates ready. They might as well put the order in.
Just start going.
But one of the things that Trish and Sarah said that really struck home for me, which is like the person who takes the belt off of MJF is going to be up for a lot of shit. It's just like all of this all of this stuff that is not instantly fixed by MJF getting like losing the belt. Everyone's going to start blaming.
I thought you were going to say getting demoted. And I was like, can we please start talking about it that way, about losing belts that way? He got demoted.
Moved to a junior position.
He doesn't have any direct reports anymore, actually. No.
So they were saying, like, let it be Samoa Joe, who, you know, nobody feels insanely about. Like, nobody, you know, he's innoxious at best to, like, most people, or you really like him. So it's like, let him handle it and then, like, give Swerve, like, a real build, which was actually kind of convincing to me that, like, if they let Swerve do a full chase once the company was a little steadier, but at the same time, the idea of having a long Samoa Joe reign is really boring to me. And I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Yeah, it would be boring to me as well. Joe's somebody that I think he is a legendary figure, right? And he's had a year that I think has wildly exceeded his expectations because, you know, I thought this guy was done. Like, I thought it was washed. Mm-hmm. I thought it was, you know, unfortunately, you know, in WWE, they kind of put him out to pasture with injuries. They suck him on commentary. And he came back this year kind of like, kind of hungry. Let's not forget that this guy decided to be like, I'll be the guy that works with CM Punk. I think there may be some reward in order for, in store for Samoa Joe at some point. And, you know, when I first started putting the pieces together that Joe is getting the title match at the end of the year, and then he actually got it, and then I started thinking about just everything, you know, it was like, all right, beat the man once, it's not that far off, you know, Joe keeps hanging around, he keeps putting these vignettes out, so I'm like, they're trying to keep him in the, you know, in your memory for a reason, so this, to me, this has written all over it. Short-term Samoa Joe run, and then after that, you can open up the floodgates, and we can swerve when we drive after that. But, you know, I don't know if it's all gonna play out like that, but I would say Swerve has definitely impressed a lot of the fans through his story alone. Like, you know, being in NXT and, you know, not really feeling like he was getting, you know, the chance, and then finally gets, you know, a little something with the North American title, doesn't really get to defend it. And then, you know, goes up to the main roster, you know, ends up getting released. And then, you know, he's got like 6 months kind of reflect, or not 6 months, maybe like 3 months of kind of reflection, like what am I going to do next? And, you know, he went to LA, started, you know, making, you know, a lot of different contacts, ended up making his theme song, reemerged on New Japan Strong, and then ultimately came to AEW. And it was like, all right, Swerve, and I told Swerve this, I was like, you solve a lot of problems for AEW. Like,
yeah.
They can show that you can push somebody that was not here at the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. you can be the first, as Swerve mentioned in his promos, you can be the first black AEW world champion. Mm-hmm. And I think what would be special about that is it's not a lifetime achievement award. It's not, he's been out here for 10 years doing his thing. And then the company finally decided to, look up and, you know, do something with him. And it's not like some charity thing either. It's like this guy has gone through the fire as a tag team wrestler in AEW. He has the long, you know, story deathmatch career, which kind of culminated in Texas Deathmatch recently. And don't forget, like, there was a reason the Acclaim got as over as they did. It's because they were wrestling Keith Lee and Swerve.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think people forget that. And I think that, you know, from there, there's been a long-term plan with this guy. They gave him his own faction. Basically got all the merch design around him. They retooled the faction when, you know, certain parts of it weren't working.
Trench.
They stumble.
Trench, and thank God.
Not the Trench.
Thank God, yeah.
they stumble on the pairing of, like, Prince Nana, who gets, like, a career rebirth, essentially. And then the song, like, that he made during his midpoint between, you know, both companies, the song catches another life, essentially, with the dance and all that. And then it's like, all right. At the same time, Swerve is, like, really working hard in the gym. So, like, he's transforming his physique to be, like, he's basically checking off every reason why it can't be him, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you're not going to tell me I'm too small. You're not going to tell me I'm too much of a cruiserweight. I'm going to be a bruiser. I'm going to still retain my work level. I'm just going to work harder and eventually start mixing in with guys like Hangman, which is why I think the Hangman feud is, like, one of the most important feuds possibly in the history of the promotion already, especially if it ends up where I think it's going. So I fully expect, you know, 2024, like, we're going to be here talking about, yeah, you know, this is where, like, look at them now. Like, and then it's going to be a lot of happy times for people. And it's going to be, as you mentioned, there are going to be complaints. There are going to be, you know, a lot of, you know, people trying to bring them down, trying to, you know, nitpick every single thing he does, because it just kind of comes with the territory. MJF got the eyes turned on him, but you can promote Swerve in a way that you can't promote MJF. You can't send MJF to the Breakfast Club. You can't send him to the BET Awards.
Yeah.
You can't send him to all these different types of kind of cross-media opportunities with Swerve. And, you know, I think AEW knows what they have in him. They have a potential crossover star. And you look at the ages on these guys, you know, the guys that we you know, came into this, like Mox, Kenny, Jericho, like, those guys are like, they're like emeritus kind of legends. Like, there's a new Forb kind of building around this thing with Will Ospreay coming into the company, Jay White, Swerve, Hangman Page. Like, those guys are going to be the guys, I think, leading this thing going forward. And I would suggest people embrace, you know, all four of those guys.
Yeah.
It was so encouraging to see Swerve at, like, the Jags game with Tony Khan and
whoever. That was cool.
Yeah, it was like, all right, good. because we can't put this on ice for too long here, buddy. Like,
I know. We've had a year where we've been burnt a lot, so it is very much like, Tony, you better show us loud and proud that you understand that you got such a good thing going here.
Yeah. Yeah, and Swerve's one of the few people lately, too, who has really, like, made the most of his opportunities, where I'm like, oh, I'm interested every time he's on screen, you know, where it's like, this is entertaining to watch in a way that, like, I don't know, Jay White's fine, but he didn't, like, super impress me in some of
I now love Jay White because of when he was on his knees looking like he couldn't believe he lost at the end of Continental Classic is working on me. Now I'm a Continental Classic girly.
I'm loving what
I'm seeing.
You want sports presentation. That's what you've always said.
I want sports presentation.
This whole podcast is going to change.
We are switching it up now.
You guys are debating star ratings with each other. Oh my God, this is going to be disgusting on here.
We're going to start keeping our own spreadsheets and being like, yeah, in my spreadsheet, I ranked that at a 4.25. So so that's kind of the definitive way that happened.
No, but I mean, it has been something I was thinking about because with the Continental Classic, we've been talking about like random matchups, but it's like Swerve and Hangman was a random matchup. Like, it's not like they've had like years of history. It's not like they've been around each other. Like,
so like, that was like they set that up, I think, really smooth. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember the week before the like we had All In, Swerve got in the casket, and then he was not on the All Out show. But in the pre-show, Hangman was in that battle royal. And the last people he was dealing with were Mogul Affiliates.
Yeah.
And then from there, they segued it right into Swerve walking out and dressing him down. So they did that kind of smooth.
Some intense glaring, and I'm interested right away. Get in there.
Now, Rich, do you know how important it was to the girlies GN to hear you talking about wrestling soulmates on your podcast? Do you know how much we love when we hear, when two people have a special connection and they're bringing out the best in each other, that is what we like to hear about.
Sarah, our mutual friend Sarah, specifically was like, can you make Rich talk about wrestling?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just kind of something I said on the fly. And like, this is a concept I think, you can apply this all throughout wrestling history. Like, sometimes you just find guys that jump in a ring and it's just like, I'm watching the peak kind of the profession. Like, I'm watching two people bring the best out of each other, that are willing to work with each other, that are have complete and total trust in each other, that they're not just in it for themselves. They're in it for the match. They're in it for the fans. And they're ultimately in it to leave something behind. Like, when they're done, like, I'm really proud of this. Like, the Eddie Guerrero Rey Mysterio matches, I think, are just phenomenal. Like, and that those are more wrestling soulmates. Like, check out Halloween Havoc 1997. Like, it's just like that match is incredible. And like Okada and Omega, like the first time you get in the ring is just magic. Kenta Kobashi, Masaru Misawa, and I feel like Swerve and Hangman. Like, the second like they came in, it was like they have like totally opposite kind of things. Like, Hangman's kind of a cowboy, Swerve kind of portrays like the kind of rap character and stuff like that. And then they're evenly sized, kind of. That has a lot to do with it too, because you can have a wrestling soulmate and they're, all sizes are welcome. We don't discriminate.
But when Big Bill wrestles Orange Cassidy, there's a comedy element to it.
Dog playing with its little toy. Yeah, right. That's not what we have with Swerve and Hangman.
Right. This is more, this is a real even fight, seemingly, But I thought the levels that they were willing to make each other look good, I think, very impressive.
No, I agree, and I think they both did such a good job of, we've touched like a little bit in the past, and then this past week we were talking about like the different ways that wrestlers can kind of like big each other up, or like, and how sometimes MJF does a little bit of an on-the-nose version of it. But Swerve and Hangman did such a good job of, like, the intensity was there, the heat was there. Like, you are very angry at each other, and at the same time making it clear to me, the viewer, that, like, you see each other as an ultimate challenge.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then there's, like, the other aspect to it. I think you guys have explored, like, it's either you guys are going to fight or you're going to do something else. Like,
and specifically, Swerve has really been playing in that space. And I mean, does he know the effect that he is having on
Good. Has he been on the Tumblr.com and seen?
I've sent him some stuff that I've seen, just his reaction. He's like, yo, some of that shit's out there, but whatever. Like, let him.
I've never been pandered to with wrestling, and I'm really loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels good. Nice change of pace. Oh, my gosh. Well, I think that might be a good place to transition into our game. We're going to have you back at some point, Rich, because I think we have some more questions that we'd love to ask about just some general kind of heel baby face stuff. But I think it would be good if we went right into our game now.
Sure.
Yeah. Girls agreed?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So this is we haven't played this one in a minute. This is a throwback game for us where we are going. I will be producing the names of two random wrestlers. We've got a whole randomizer set up here.
Oh, shit.
And what we talk about is if they're going on a date, what the date is going to be, and just kind of how we think it's going to go.
Sure.
And it does not have to go well.
It often does.
Some of them go pretty bad. But, you know, where do they go? What do they do? What do they talk about?
I believe the last time we played this, we played it with Marty DeRosa, and he sent Britt and Brandon Cutler on a date. And
they really emotionally connected on the date Marty sent them on. So that was nice.
Marty,
I liked it.
Marty was extremely good at kind of figuring out what some of the big emotional breakthroughs were going to be for these couples in a way that I think we have maybe played this game once or twice since, but we've never managed to match that level of psychological realism. So, okay, I'm not going to use our randomizer because I did pull some. So we're going to start with pairing one, Ethan Page and Britt Baker.
Man. All right. So I imagine, I think I got to set up some lore here first.
Yes.
I can't just take
that is what I love to hear
out of this. So
that's what we needed.
Britt frustrated with Adam Cole, never popping the question.
Love it. Love it.
Decides,
CM Punk talking to them about it, being a jerk, bringing it up. Yeah.
You know, saying, hey, what's up with this guy? It finally works. CM Punk does not get the benefit, though, because he's no longer around. She tells Adam Cole he doesn't have to go home, but he has to get the hell out of here. And, you know, she shows back up to backstage, and she runs into Ethan Page. And, you know, she's looking kind of, you know, down about herself. And some reason she chooses to confide in Ethan Page. Ethan Page has been, you know, he's been working on his physique pretty heavily. Like, he's been.
Yes. We hear about it a lot, yeah.
You know, Britt notices this, like, and she's like, you know, what do I got to lose? Britt shoots her shot.
Surprisingly,
yeah. Like at Ethan Page, and Ethan Page is not really sure how this is going to go. He's like, hey, man, I'm not really trying to do all that. I'm trying to focus on the career, all that. And, you know,
I'm actually in the gym a lot these days.
I got this whole thing where I live in Canada. It's kind of hard to get in and out of the country, you know. sure, Britt. You know, we're in Montreal. We'll wait till we're in Montreal. We're in Montreal, Canada this week, right?
Montreal.
He needs a little home turf advantage. Yeah.
So Britt is like, all right, no problem. I'll fly into Canada. I'm a dentist. Whatever. money is long.
I have the money.
Yeah, money is long. So Britt decides to pull up. And she's taking Ethan Page out. So Ethan Page is kind of awkward, and he's wearing one of those flower shirts and white pants. odd dress for a Canadian winter.
Miami and Montreal meet in Ethan Page's. Yeah.
And I imagine Britt pulls up in, like, you know, like an all-black Range Rover or something. And, you know, she's, you know, they go to a restaurant, you know, they want to get, you know, some steak or something like that. And they just start talking about each other's, you know, wrestling careers. Kind of, you know, just these typical kind of break the ice questions. And then eventually Ethan Page is like, what did you really bring me here for? And then, then Britt is like, she's like, yeah, I, you know, have just always kind of seen you. And I've just been looking for a reason to, you know, pull you aside and spend some time with you. And then Ethan Page just totally just doesn't understand this. He's just like, spend time with me. I don't understand. Like, and he just plays dumb the whole time and just totally doesn't get it. And he then, you know, offers to pay, but, you know, Britt, money long, as I mentioned, she pays for the whole thing.
Yeah, that dentist money,
But, you know, they then, you know, from the restaurant, you know, they're like, hey, you're, you know, a movie is playing. Let's go see the new Thanksgiving movie, you know, the slasher and yes. all that. So oh,
good choice.
So from there, you know, I think they go in the movie and, you know, it's dark. Britt's trying to cozy up a little bit, but Ethan Page is actually a scared child during this movie. He just doesn't.
Ethan Page has been a scared child this whole night. He's like, yeah, what happened?
He's just totally kind of just not understanding what's going on here.
He's like, I think I'm in some kind of trap.
Right. And, you know, from there, like, you know, a text comes in from Madam Cole. And, you know, Britt ends up, you know, saying, you know, exactly what she's doing. Cole's just heartbroken. He's sending emojis and everything like that.
Now, has he been forced to fly out to the Montreal show with his broken foot, or is he like sad home bachelor apartment, regretting his life, regretting his choices?
So Adam Cole and Britt Baker, like, unfortunately, so, you know, Britt wears the pants in a relationship, right? Yeah, so Britt has forgotten to take off her location device because she always wanted to know where Adam Cole was, but Adam Cole ended up, you know, using the thing on her. So all of a sudden, Adam Cole is local to the event.
Wow.
And then
find my friend's twist.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I know.
Yeah, I'm just freestyling kind of now as I go, but
you do have a little bit of a look on your face where you're like, where am I going? I have no idea.
We'll see. But Adam Cole comes in and he wants to kick some ass, you know, all 5 foot, you know, five of himself.
Then so he like, comes into the theater, like, are they, they're comes, still watching
he,
the movie?
He comes in with a big thing of popcorn.
Nice.
He stopped to get popcorn?
Yeah, of course. He has to brandish. He has to brandish some kind of weapon.
He needs a prop. That's true.
So he comes in and, you know, he basically tells Ethan Page to stand up because Ethan Page is in his seat.
Oh, no.
All of a sudden, Ethan Page understands what's going on now. He's like, oh, no. I will not be made to be look like some punk in my home country from this short feller.
You want to be in Canada?
Yeah, it's not happening. I'm just like Bret Hart. I'm refusing to lose in Montreal. And
a Montreal screw job.
But
this entire thing,
beautiful.
This entire thing, you know, culminates in a big fight where Ethan Page ends up getting the better of Adam Cole, and Britt is just like, she's distraught because she just doesn't know like how to feel about all this. So she's the one that brought Ethan Page there. She figures she's responsible for getting him home. Mm. Cole disappears into the ether. don't know. He snatched by aliens at this point. He was summoned to take a loss.
I love that. I have a mental image of Britt like being like, Ethan, come on, we're going. She's ushering him over Adam Cole's prone body. He's knocked out with the popcorn all over him. And Britt is just stepping over him like, Ethan, let's go. Time to go now.
All the butter that he put on the popcorn is like in his hair now. Yeah. It's like, an ugly
classic
scene.
Adam Cole grease.
On his white pants. And, Britt's got to tend to him now.
So Britt's like, I don't quite want to end this night yet. We got to talk about what just happened, essentially. So they pull up to the hotel and they do one of the classic, all right, we're going to park and talk in the car. And from there, they just kind of open up their whole careers to each other and life stories. And then Ethan Page looks in Britt Baker's eyes and says, this ain't going to work. I'm going upstairs. I'm going to sleep.
Ethan Page is like, as I said 8 hours ago, I just don't see this happening.
Yeah. And then, you know, he leaves. And Britt is just there, not kind of, you know, just kind of, you know, Britt's, you know, putting the charm on, just doesn't understand why it didn't work. She paid for the meal. She picked him up.
Yeah.
She brought him to a movie.
And now she's covered in popcorn and her ex showed up.
Ex was whooped. Ex was discarded. And then, you know, she's confused. And then, can I get another random name?
Oh, another. Yes, hang on. Let me. It's Kenny Omega.
This story is now going to end in a different way than I had planned. But
the that does
Kenny Omega is walking his cat at 1 a.m. randomly.
That sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah.
Nothing could be more right.
In the shorts, and he's also wearing those pointy shoes that he used to wear for some reason in the snow. Oh. He pulls up. And,
classic
you know,
Canada Kenny. Yeah.
And he's got a match with Ethan Page coming up.
He does.
Oh my God, that's right. What the fuck?
The spreadsheet knew.
Yeah. So like you know she was like Kenny, what are you doing out here? Because obviously she sees a ridiculous outfit. And Kenny invites Britt to come, you know, back and for a long night of video games. And that is the end of the story.
Wow. Wow.
Britt's had a weird night.
And Kenny promises to get 4.5 stars out of Ethan Page. to make up for her sorrows and sadness.
It's the rightest thing in the world that it's like Britt presumably just looks like kind of devastated, emotionally wrecked. Like she doesn't even really know why she was pushing so hard for this thing with Ethan Page, but like she just wants to feel something. And Kenny sees this person having an intense emotional experience, and he's not mean, but he says, we can play video games. I would love to
totally platonic.
Play video games with you, and I think that'll probably solve everything. That can solve any emotional issue.
I wish so bad that we could somehow film the drunk history version of this, like where it's like Rich's voiceover, but like Kenny, Ethan, Adam Cole, and Britt are acting this out.
I honestly feel like if we clipped it and sent it to them, they might be willing.
They might do it. Yeah. Wow.
Swerve.
I do want to let you know that. So I generated Kenny's name using our dating game generator.
Amazing.
Which, of course, always generates two names. So the dating game generator actually was suggesting that Kenny was going to be going on a date with Orange Cassidy. And so now the other thing happening at the end of the story for me is that Kenny told Orange Cassidy he was going to call him and they'd hook up later. But he doesn't because he goes back to his
room. He got distracted with
to
Britt.
Play video games.
He was like, so after I walk the cat, I'll call night, you. Like,
come what the on. Hell is
this? And that kicks off a feud.
I want to see it.
Look at
Oh man.
Wow.
Book to perfection.
Wow. Yeah, I need a cigarette.
I know. Yeah. Rich, you took us places we had no idea we were going to go. We loved it.
Yeah. Wow.
Do we want to do one more or do we feel like that's
what
that's enough?
Top that?
I know. It's hard to imagine, but I got to ask.
Yeah.
No, sure. Why not? Oh, yeah. You know, let's see what else we can think of.
Yes, we love the enthusiasm. Okay. I was just going to see if I got a better one from there, but I didn't. Now, this can take you to a little bit of a different place, and it's featuring a character that we already brought up, Brandon Cutler, who will be going on a date with Miro.
Okay. Okay.
Well, they can't have sex. That would be really hazardous. Brandon Cutler would get broken in half.
Or would he? I thought you might be.
You know, he's a big guy too.
He's tall, certainly.
He's certainly tall. Okay, well, what do you got for us?
So Brandon Cutler and Miro, after a long day of pro wrestling, are both set to fly out of the city the next day. But, you know, they're in Canada, all the snow, their plane gets canceled.
Oh. So, Classic Canada tour setup.
They're stuck in Canada. And it's like, all right, nothing wrong with Canada, but who wants to be stuck in Canada? Like, Miro lives in Tennessee, Cutler lives in California. You're a long way from home. So they're like, well, I'm just going to jump on this app here and I'm going to just start swiping. And then all of a sudden, you know, these guys that, you know, are working, you know, same company for years at this point and never really talk to each other, all of a sudden they're blind matched. So it's a situation where you can't like quite see the person. I don't know if this is how any of the dating apps work. I've never been on
one. They work the way we need them to work for the story.
Okay. So it's a blind match, and then, you know, Miro and Color, you know, kind of run into each other, and they're like, "Yeah, man, you know, what are you doing here?" And then he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" And then they both like look at each other, and it's been about 10 minutes, and they're like, "Hold on.
Oh.
Is you like it?" Like, and then they both, you know, kind of be like, "You know, I didn't know, you know." And from there, they quickly get over that. But, you know, Cutler is a big Dungeons and Dragons guy. So he, you know, asked Miro if he'd like to see the outfit. And he's like, "Yo, I've got one your size. Would you like to put it on? Just add random. I have
that's
it."
That's a fantastic line.
So Miro, you know, in the place that they met up, comes out in the outfit.
Yeah.
Cutler sees this, and he's just like, I can't believe this. This is ideal. This is amazing. You can still see the muscular definition.
Cutler's been dreaming of his whole life.
I have to tell you, Rich, that I don't know if you've ever seen a classic movie, Singing in the Rain, but
I have not.
In the middle of Singing in the Rain, just a normal film, people do sing, but it's like pretty normal. There is just a 10-minute ballet dream sequence about like a man going to the big city and falling in love, and he's dancing and sets are moving, and that's how I'm imagining this. It has that same kind of beautiful dream logic of just like something is happening that transcends reality here. Yeah. Like, it is a magical connection.
So, you know, as I mentioned, the, you know, Cutler offered his outfit. So who would Miro be if he didn't offer one of his own outfits? However, he does not have Brandon Cutler's size just on hand the way, you know, Cutler had Miro. So here's Brandon Cutler wearing some 2X shorts and, you know, struggling, you know, to keep them around his waist. So here he has to find a way to use, like, some kind of rope to, you know...
He kind of has like an 8-year-old in his dad's clothes energy. Yes. Yeah.
Some classic MacGyvering during this snowstorm in Canada.
Yep. And then, you know, they decide, you know, maybe, you know, you would think this thing's going to break down into, you know, physical, you know, attraction with each other, but it is not. This thing. This thing.
Zach Dunya.
Yeah. He's like, "Hey, man, you know, maybe we can just meet up every so often and just try on each other's clothes." And then these guys, just from city to city, they meet up and just wear each other's clothes. And they never talk about it. They never explore why they like doing this.
And
they just continue to wear each other's clothes. And Miro never corrects the sizing, ever. He's just like, "Bring
that's
the rope."
That's part of it for them.
Bring the rope.
But they just have the weird world's weirdest.
Is he just texting?
They found each other.
Brandon sometimes, "Bring the rope.
Bring the rope." And that's it. And then, like, this thing goes on for, you know, about 6 months or so.
Yeah.
And, you know, smooth sailing. Nobody's seeing them. You know, nobody's, you know, wondering.
Caught
nothing weird's happening. They're just wearing each other's clothes. Until Matt and Nick Jackson happen to just walk in the dressing room one day. They see him wearing Miro's clothes. And they're like, "Bro, what is this?" Like,
they would not be able to keep quiet about it.
Do they recognize that they're Miro's clothes, or are they just like, "You're wearing really big clothes"?
Since they say Miro on the front,
Miro. Miro wants him to be wearing his name.
Right,
yeah,
so
that's part of it.
They're just like, but they only see it from a service level. It's like, "Why are you wearing Miro's clothes?" They have no idea of the 6 month of clothes swapping that's been going on here.
They think it's a one-time thing. They think he like fell in the pool or something.
Right. So while they're in there, Miro barges in anticipating the swap coming to get his stuff back, bringing in the dragon costume. So Miro comes in wearing the dragon costume fitted to his size. The Young Bucks immediately know something weird is going on. They look at each other. They look at those guys. They say, wrestling's a crazy business. And then they just walk out the room like they never saw anything.
Well, you got to never talk about it again.
And it is never spoken of again. Yeah.
I am so happy.
Wow.
I love the Young Bucks. Wow. They said, live your life your way.
You're in a close swap with Miro. Well, wrestling's a crazy business.
It's a crazy business.
I just want to say that my favorite part of that story and the part that will haunt me for the rest of my life is Miro coming out in the dragon costume and Brandon's reaction being, that's ideal.
That's how these things are supposed to look. God damn it. Big and tough.
I'm so happy. God. I'm so glad we made him do another one.
I know. Rich. We said, how could the Brit one be topped? But he was like, you topped I'll tell it. You how.
Yeah. Hold my beer. I got this.
Wow.
I got
Rich,
this.
You got an A plus 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 in the dating game.
Oh, thank you.
You killed it. Thank you so much for coming and joining us tonight.
Absolutely. Anytime. And, you know, we'll have to get you guys over on ONR and on the live stream with us.
We anytime. Fear the live stream, but we would be so happy to visit anytime.
Sure.
Is there anything that you want to pitch before we head out?
Sure. Yeah. We actually just recorded the FOH draft with myself, James, and then Jeremy and Josh from Keeping It Strong Style. The FOH draft is our annual show. It's the one paid show of the year. We put it up on payhip.com, and it's a pay what you want model. We get drunk on air and we descend into shooting on everything in wrestling in the business. And FOH 22 was our highest, you know, performing one every year. It's been a little bit bigger show, and this year I got, you know, a lofty goal of I'm not gonna say the goal, but I think anybody should check that out. It'll probably be out over the next couple of weeks, but you guys can check out the Social Suplex Podcast Network. I host One Nation Radio with James Boyd, as I mentioned earlier in the show, and we. Basically, you know, we'll talk about, you know, other things like, you know, sports or music or politics or any, you know, major thing that kind of happens along with, you know, pro wrestling and with AEW. We talk about Stardom as well. And just check me out, you know, on YouTube. You just type in Rich Ladd. I do a lot of stuff, you know, with music as well.
That's awesome. And I hope you guys are very clear by now on the fact that we recommend all of Rich's shit. We love listening to ONR. I'll definitely be checking out a show where you guys all get drunk and say what you feel about the world of wrestling. I can't wait to hear that.
I think the funny part of this one, like it all culminates in Josh from Keeping It Strong Style, a bunch of chops happening. So, like, I'm eager to see how that sounds on air. So, we recorded it in person. So,
yeah, I saw that one clip. Yeah, yeah, I saw that one the clip you put on Twitter and was losing it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, well, thank you so much, Rich. You will be hearing this when you hear it. I don't know when it's going up, but you'll then be hearing from us again soon to discuss the weekly events in wrestling. On that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk. Our theme's by Chris Corkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, Tumblr Tunnel Talk Pod, via email tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, and come back later this week or next week, whenever the next step comes out.